The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Florida to Washington State, from Maine down to San Diego and Alaska and Hawaii in Europe, and of course our friends up north. Bonjour, hi. It's great to have you. I am maybe a little bit choppy this morning. I was up late doing the Zoom, as Joe Biden likes to call it, and the Zoom last night allowed me to connect with the Legatus chapters of Southern California. Legatus is an organization of Catholic men and women who lead businesses, and they're terrific. They're wonderful. And so I gave last night the Catholic case for voting for Donald Trump. There's a very specific Catholic case for voting for Donald Trump. And so a few hundred people gathered in a parking lot in Orange County, and I spoke with them. But, of course, they had to have dinner first because they're Catholics. And, you know, you don't do anything until you've had dinner. And probably a few drinks because, again, they're Catholics. And make sure that they've had the opening prayer and the appropriate roasting of whoever's in charge because they're Catholics. And it's sort of like every parish function ever, except it's for businessmen and women and their spouses. So we had a wonderful time. But, of course, they get going at 7 o'clock, and the speaker comes on about 8 and goes to after 9, which is great unless you're sitting in the Zoom inside the Beltway, as I was, and I've decided, though, I'm not going to tell everyone that Archbishop Chaput, who is the greatest Catholic speaker in America, is, quote, retired now and probably could do the Zoom for every Legatus chapter in America if they asked him. I'm not going to tell him that. Sorry, Archbishop. He listens to the show. I got a few people that I think about before I begin the show every morning. The Archbishop, Urban Meyer. Various people like that keep me on my toes so that he do not give you a substandard performance every morning on the dot. But the Zoom makes possible speaking events I had never thought before. And even the world is beginning to figure this out. Washington Speakers Bureau, who arranges my speaking events, has begun to get requests from everywhere to go doing the Zoom. And I don't mind doing the Zoom, except part of the art of speaking. And I'm a humble guy, but I'm the best at public speaking that I know. I'm a humble guy, but the Johnny Ringo of speakers, and the Ringo Kid, I guess, is what you would call it. And the fact remains that you need an audience. You need an audience. This is why Joe Biden has looked so awful. The former vice president did not the Zoom yesterday. He did the TV yesterday. A remote interview with WHTM in Pennsylvania. Let's do this and let's intertwine the Wayback Machine, shall we? Cut number one, yesterday, Joe Biden talking to WHTM in Pennsylvania.
I never told the environmentalists that I'm going to ban fracking, period, number one. Number two is a flat lie about what President Trump is saying. I've said repeatedly on the record and during the campaign. What I did say was I would make sure that any new fracking taking place made sure the water supply and methane was not leaking. They're the two things. That's it. I will not ban fracking.
Let's get into the Wayback Machine and go back to Joe Biden. Cut number two.
No new fracking. We are going to get rid of fossil fuels.
Well, like, what about, say, stopping fracking and stopping pipeline?
Would there be any place for fossil fuels, including coal and fracking, in a Biden administration?
No, we would work it out. We would make sure it's eliminated.
I guarantee you, we're going to end fossil fuel, and I am not going to cooperate.
No ability for the oil industry to continue to drill, period. Ends. Number one.
Three consecutive American presidents have enjoyed stints of explosive economic growth due to a boom in oil and natural gas production. As president, would you be willing to sacrifice some of that growth, even knowing potentially that it could displace thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of blue-collar workers, in the interest of transitioning to that greener economy?
The answer is yes.
Now,
no new fracking.
Now, let's go back to yesterday. Again, this is not the Zoom. This is the TV. WHTN, Pennsylvania, cut number three, Joe Biden.
Not only don't want to defund the police, I'm the one calling for $300 million more for local police, for community policing. I also think we should add social workers and psychologists to help police on 911 calls. The only person calling to defund the police is Donald Trump. Look at his budget. He calls for cutting police funding for local, state and local help by $400 million. Once again, he's pathological.
Let's get into the Wayback Machine. Once again, Joe Biden in the flashback. Cut number four.
Surplus military equipment for law enforcement. They don't need that. The last thing you need is an up-armored Humvee coming into a neighborhood. It's like the military invading. They don't know anybody. They become the enemy. They're supposed to be protecting these people. So my generic point is that...
But do we agree that we can redirect some of the funding?
Yes.
Yes, but, you know, that's Joe. Let's do one more of the present day. Joe Biden on the TV, WHTM, Pennsylvania, cut number five.
Not true. I can actually cut taxes for middle-class people. Anybody making less than $400,000 wouldn't pay a penny. But guess what? The super wealthy will start to pay what they should pay. I'm going to increase the tax rate to back to what it was under George Bush, 36.9%. That would raise close to $1 trillion. We're going to also make sure that the tax rate goes down not to 20% for corporate America, but to 28% from 38%. That raises a considerable amount of money as well. Make sure that people, in fact, who are in a situation where they are paying no taxes, major corporate, they pay a minimum of 50% tax, because you have 19 corporations making billions of dollars paying zero tax. I pay for every single thing that I plan on doing, for education, for health care, for all the things that matter in terms of people being employed and ordinary middle class people having a fighting chance.
Can you define, so you said you want to tax super wealthy. Can you define that? Is that a couple making $200,000 a year?
No one making more than $400,000, but everybody's taxes are going to go up to 30. Those folks above that, they're going to go up to 36.9%. And so you're in a situation where that will generate billions and billions of dollars in taxes. Right now, what's happening? You're paying a heck of a lot more tax than someone making $1 billion in many cases, where they're able to avoid almost all their taxes. That's just simply wrong. It's not punishing anybody. It's just saying corporate America, as well as the super wealthy, just pay their fair share. The tax cut the president put through for over almost $2 trillion, by the time it works its way out, you got about 80% of it going to the top 1%. Is that fair? I'm not talking about punishing anybody. Just everybody pay their fair share. And the middle class is really taking a hit.
That's called soaking the rich. So Joe Biden on the WHTM yesterday lied about being against fracking, lied about wanting to defund the police, and lied about a massive tax hike for $4 trillion coming your way. Meanwhile, Larry Kudlow is on Fox. He believes we have crossed the magic line. Cut number six.
Now, look, as I say, we are in a self-sustaining recovery. Besides the jobs, we're in a housing boom, we're in autos boom, we're in a consumer spending boom. Inventories are at rock bottom. They're going to be rebuilt. Small businesses have greater confidence. No, the economy is rebounding. It's V-shaped. It's going to be at least 20%. In Q3 and probably Q4. But
the president wants this stimulus. He says the Democrats are trying to keep it away from him because they believe it'll help him get reelected.
Well, I think targeted areas, Secretary Mnuchin has said this many times, so has the president, targeted areas could be very helpful. maybe even make the recovery even stronger. Okay. For example, the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's coming out with a package today. It's going to be targeting health care, education, and the economy. I think small business PPP loans are going to be extended. We've always wanted to help the kids. We've always wanted to help reopen the schools to help the kids and get more jobs. And if they want to add targeted checks, that's fine, too. I'm not saying the recovery is dependent on it, but I am saying it would help. It could make things even better. So why don't we just take the four or five areas, do it narrowly, do it in a targeted way, and let's get this thing done, for heaven's sakes. I don't see what's wrong with that.
Oh, Larry, I love Larry Kudlow. Don't you love Larry Kudlow? He's the second best Catholic speaker. All the Legatus chapters already gotten a request. Hey, how about our chapter to do the Zoom with the Legatus chapters other than California? Larry Kudlow's the second best Catholic speaker in America. Like I say, Archbishop Chaput, you ought to have him, but you're already sending him to me. You probably can't find him. Hey, the market was crushed yesterday. Dow down 632, NASDAQ down 465, the S&P down 95. But gold this morning is at 1934. You can get gold at HughGold.com or text my name, Hugh, to 474747. Markets look very good today, up 1% in Europe and in Germany and in England. Looks very strong here in the United States as well. So going to be a good day on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Hi, Hugh Hewitt for ReliefFactor.com. If you are in pain and you want out of pain, well, you need to talk to the people that get it done. Pete and Seth Talbot, the father-son owners of ReliefFactor.com. They tell me that sometimes whole families can be helped when one member of the family gets out of pain. For example, finally, a married couple gets to sleep through the night again when one isn't tossing and turning with a terrible back. That's why Pete and Seth created the 3-week quick start, so you can find out if those people are you. For about $1 a day, you can see if you can get out of pain, and after that, lessen the cost of a cup of coffee a week to stay out of pain. The 3-week quick start is like a trial pack, and it can be at your door in about 2 to 3 days. Let's face it, getting older, exercise, even everyday living can create discomfort, pain. You don't order Relief Factor just for yourself. Order it for your wife, your husband, your family, your friends. They miss the old you, too. A 3-week quick start at ReliefFactor.com or call 800-500-8384. 800-500-8384.
Once upon a time, once when you were mine, I remember your skies, reflected in your eyes.
Listen to the bass here.
I wonder if you think about me.
Just saying, we were better sometimes. Always on call. I had lunch yesterday with a magnificent writer. He's going to find out I talk about my life on the air with Andrew Ferguson, just a magnificent writer. And Andy went to Occidental. And he went off into the rock and roll world, and we were talking about the Whiskey at Go-Go. It's a small world. This is how small the world is. My producer for 10 years on television, when he did the nightly news in L.A., for 10 years for PBS, was a guy named Martin Burns, Marty Burns. And Martin, one of my dearest friends, and unfortunately died an early death mountain climbing. And just one of the most wonderful men in the world. Lefty, 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 lefty. And Andy was then a lefty. He's become a righty. But in the meantime, they were good buds at Occidental. So we didn't know that when we sat down. I've been reading Andrew Ferguson for 30 years, but I haven't. I've interviewed him before, but I haven't met him in person. It takes about 5 minutes for me to run through my list of Occidental graduates, Pat Morrison and Martin Burns. Said, Marty, how do you know Marty? And then we just talked about Martin Burns for all of lunch. That's how small the world is. Marty was a terrific producer. And the reason he was a terrific producer is because before we went on air, every single time, he said, remember, energy. That's what he'd always say, energy, for 10 years, 3 to 5 nights a week, 10 years. Energy, energy. And so I ask you, my question of the day, does Joe Biden have the energy, and I would add the acuity, to be president? because it takes a lot of energy. The one thing people can't argue about is Donald Trump's energy level. It just takes an enormous amount of energy. Here is Donald Trump on the tarmac at Andrews yesterday before he flies off to Jupiter, Florida, and then Winston-Salem. Guy made two stops yesterday. Joe Biden barely gets through a WHTM television interview, and Donald Trump is running around doing touch-and-go rallies. Andrews Air Force before leaving, cut number seven.
This is the most important election in the history of our country. We have a radical left group going around. These people, there's something wrong with them. There really is. There's something wrong with them. And Joe doesn't have the strength. He doesn't have the mental capability to control these people. And you take a look at what's going on, and I looked at Pittsburgh, I looked at Rochester, I looked at L.A. last night, I looked at these Democrat-run cities. Now, you look at Portland every night. They don't have the strength. They don't have I don't think the Democrats have the courage to control these people. They're afraid to even talk about law and order. They can't issue the words law and order. All we want is law and order. And I just put out something. The suburbs are coming big to us because the suburbs are next. If you elected this guy, the suburbs would be overwhelmed with violence and crime. So that's where we are. This is the most important election in the history of our country. So that's it. We'll see you in Florida. Thank you.
So I didn't know about L.A. until I heard that. Protesters clashed over Dijon Kesey's fatal shooting, with deputies and protesters clashing, meaning they had a melee. A demonstration against the fatal shooting of Dijon Kesey on Saturday night ended with deputies and protesters clashing in front of the sheriff's station. And that's never good. But it's spreading, and it's sort of the model now. They also have fires galore. The Bobcat Fire, ominously named in my opinion, has pushed into Monrovia and Arcadia. Not a good thing at all. Donald Trump on, well, let's wait until after the break to play that. I can do a quick Kamala Harris, cut number 25.
Yeah, no, it's not really good.
Really wonderful. I mean, they're an incredible family, and what they've endured, and they just do it with such dignity and grace. And, you know, they're carrying the weight of a lot of voices on their shoulders.
And what was the message that you shared with
him? Thank you. Just to express concern for their, you know, well-being, and, of course, for their brother and their son's well-being, and to let them know that they have support.
Kamala Harris fitting Jacob Blake yesterday, not taking questions except that one. Don't go anywhere, America. I'll be right back. Byron York is back. I want to continue my conversation with him about his brand-new book, Obsession, Inside the Washington Establishment's Never-Ending War on Trump. This is a must-read book, Obsession. I'll be right back. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. Byron York joins me. You know him from Fox News, The Washington Examiner. He is the author of Obsession, Inside the Washington Establishment's Never-Ending War on Trump. Obsession is the book I was obsessed with this weekend. Read it in 48 hours. Took copious notes and had Byron on yesterday and said, come back tomorrow, because I didn't even get through a third of my notes. Good morning, Byron. How are you?
Good morning, Hugh. I'm great. How are you?
Good. How did the first day of the Obsession book tour go?
So far, so good. You know, there's a lot of news in the book, and we're not really discussing. We can just talk about anything we want, but I've been kind of rolling it out. So there'll be much more today and tomorrow.
Let's start. I'll just go through my questions. When you feel like bringing something up, bring something up. I want to start, if we can, with Rod Rosenstein. I was at the Aspen Security Forum three summers ago, and it was just weird. He was introduced, and the very liberal crowd rose like he was a savior arriving from a conquering ship. And he kind of he liked it. He took it all in. And I thought to myself, this fella is a wonderful man, a career prosecutor, but he had no idea what he was doing when he wrote out the directions for Robert Mueller. He had no idea what he was doing when he appointed a special counsel. Did it ever become clear to you? Did you get it? Did Rod Rosenstein talk to you? Because he didn't talk to many people.
No, he did not.
And so what do you think is the story behind his rather inept opening act in the whole Mueller special counsel bizarre thing?
Well, you know, the president was absolutely stunned by the appointment of Mueller. And that scene is actually in the Mueller report where he says, oh, this is terrible. This is the worst thing. I'm effed. And I think it's been widely misunderstood, for example. But the point is he felt sandbagged by Rod Rosenstein. And I think Rosenstein's behavior, remember the discussing the possibility of wearing a wire into the Oval Office to secretly record the president, or the possibility of going to others in the cabinet. He was not, you know, the attorney general, but he still thought about going to others in the cabinet to gauge support for a 25th Amendment effort to remove the president. I mean, this was really not just kind of crazy, but also ham-handed. But after Jeff Sessions recused himself, and remember, that's something that President Trump will never, ever, ever forgive Sessions for. After Sessions recused himself, Rosenstein was the guy who made these decisions.
And when he did so against a backdrop that was not neutral. And I like the fact, I think I told you via text message this weekend, in Obsession, you review the fact that James Comey, before he was the director of the FBI, had Rod Rosenstein's job, deputy attorney general. And when he was in that job, James Comey was presented with a case that was even thinner than the case for impeachment on Russia. And that was the Scooter Libby case, which wasn't about Scooter Libby. And he appointed a friend, Patrick Fitzgerald. Would you remind people what happened there? Because it really still burns my chaps what Fitzgerald did and why Comey let him do it.
Yeah, well, there was a big controversy. Obviously, there was a huge controversy over the Iraq war. And opposition to the war was kind of getting its act together. And George W. Bush, in his State of the Union, had said that Iraq had sought yellowcake uranium, an element of nuclear weapons, in Africa. That was it. It was called the 16 words. It was one sentence. And what happened was the CIA appointed a man named Joe Wilson. He was a former ambassador to an African country to go over to Africa and look for evidence of this yellowcake story. And he comes back and he publishes a story in the New York Times saying he didn't find any yellowcake in Africa and the president was lying to his teeth in the the State of the Union. And so this causes an uproar. The people in the White House say, who is this guy, this Joe Wilson guy? Who is it? And they learn that his wife was a CIA operative, a woman named Valerie Plame. And Robert Novak, the late Robert Novak, the conservative columnist, published a column saying, well, you know, they were wondering why in the world this Wilson guy went to Africa, and it was his wife, who's a CIA operative. And a man named David Korn, who's a reporter for Mother Jones at the time, just starts yelling, oh, my God, Valerie Plame is a covert operative. She's undercover at the CIA, and the president has, Robert Novak, has outed a secret CIA agent, and she's going to be in danger of her life, and this is classified information, and it could be treason. What happens is they appoint the Democrats, Charles Schumer, and everybody start yelling about this, and a special counsel is appointed, and James Comey is a deputy attorney general at the time, and he's the one who appoints his friend, Patrick Fitzgerald, to be the special counsel. Now, there was a man named Richard Armitage, who was a close associate of Colin Powell. He was in the State Department, and he is the one who told Novak about Valerie Plame's identity. And privately, he told investigators that. They knew from the very beginning who leaked her identity, and yet the special counsel's investigation went on for 3 years, was very damaging to the Bush administration, and it came up with nothing. And in the end, they charged Scooter Libby, who was Vice President Cheney's chief of staff, with lying to investigators. In other words, a process crime. That's all that happened. But this caused enormous damage to the Bush administration. And the reason we tell tell this long story is that's what Trump could see on the day he learns that a special counsel has been appointed for him and Russia.
And in fact, that's what happened, because after they discovered there was no collusion, which may have taken longer because they didn't have a Richard Armitage to show up and say it was me. I colluded with the Russians the way Armitage said it was me. I outed Plame. It took longer to establish there was no collusion, but still it went on. This brings us to Special Counsel Mueller. Now, Byron, I can't tell you how many times I went on Meet the Press as the, you know, designated conservative panelist and defended Special Counsel Mueller based upon mutual friends. I don't know him, but many of the people I worked with in the White House counsel's office during the Reagan years, many of the people that I know in the Washington legal establishment swear by the guy. And yet, when you come to the quote of John Dowd, who said that, quote, I lost all respect for Mueller on March 5 as a man, as a Marine, as a lawyer. That's pretty devastating. What did Robert Mueller do on March 5 that sent John Dowd over the moon?
Well, the special counsel and the White House, the Trump defense team, made an unprecedented deal early on in the investigation. In June of 2017, I remember Mueller is just appointed on May 17th, so about a month later in June, they have a meeting. And basically the Trump team says this, the president wants this investigation over, and he wants it over fast. And you, Robert Mueller, you want cooperation. You want to be able to interview people in the White House. You want documents. Now, most of that is probably covered by executive privilege, and we could fight you. We could take you to court. We could drag this thing out forever. But the president wants it over fast, so here's the deal. We will offer you unprecedented cooperation. You talk to anybody you want to for as long as you want to. We give you all the documents. But in return, we want you to get this thing over fast. And Robert Mueller says, I don't let grass grow under me, which everybody takes as a yes, and they shake hands, and that's the deal. And what happens is Trump keeps his end of the bargain. He gives them millions and millions of documents, I should say hundreds of thousands of documents, and he allows everybody to testify before Mueller. Remember, the White House counsel, Don McGahn.
I worked for the White House counsel, Fred Fielding. I can't believe it still.
He testified for 30 hours to Robert Mueller's prosecutor, and he did that because the president raised no objection. So anyway, what happens is Mueller begins his investigation. He's clearly looking for collusion in all the normal places, George Papadopoulos, Carter Page, that crazy incident at the Republican convention in 2016. He's not finding it. So by the end of the year, the Trump team knows that collusion is a dry hole for the Mueller investigation. And they have this meeting in December, and they say, look, we've kept our end of the deal. You haven't found collusion. It's time to wrap it up. And then at that meeting, Mueller says, I think we need to talk to the president. And that changes everything. Because it's clear that Mueller is, having failed to find collusion, is now going to search for obstruction. And he's going to need to know the president's state of mind. So they fight about this for a few months. And in this March 5th, 2018 meeting, 3 months later, you're talking about, basically they go over the same issues again. And Mueller says, well, maybe I'll just have to issue a subpoena for the president. And that is when John Dowd smashes his hand on the table and declares, you want war? If you do that, you're going to get war, and you're going to lose. Because the Trump team knew that Mueller had failed to establish the underlying allegation in all of this, that collusion took place. But he still was pushing ahead.
And you explained, by the way, an obsession very well. The underlying collusion requires a predicate that be proven if the subpoena is going to be. For a layman, I'm reading it as a lawyer, and I think a layman will understand why they would never have gotten a subpoena if they read obsession. Even quickly, they'll see it, Byron. I don't know who taught you the law in a couple of years, but you got it nailed. And Jay Sekulow, who obviously talked to you at length, says on page 164, they kept going to try to get somebody to perjure themselves. Isn't that the succinct summary?
That is exactly what the question was. They haven't found collusion, and because of that, they don't really have any reason to go forward, and yet they are. Why are they doing it? They seem to want to set up a perjury trap for the president. And part of the reason they know that is the way they charged Michael Flynn. And remember, after the interview of Michael Flynn in the White House, January 24, 2017, the FBI wasn't going to charge him. It wasn't until Mueller came into office in May that they took the Flynn case off the shelf and said, ah, we can charge this guy with something, lying to investigators, and put pressure on him, and maybe he'll tell us about all this collusion that we seem to believe is out there. George Papadopoulos, also charged with lying to investigators. A couple of minor players charged with the same thing. And so the Trump team was looking at this and saying, Mueller has no crime. He can't establish that the crime even occurred, much less who did it. And yet he's still pushing for this. And the only reason can be he's hoping to catch the president in a lie, and then that will be the story.
Call it a perjury trap. When we come back after break, we'll talk more about the book is Obsession. Very easy to remember. Go to Amazon right now. When I did the Legatus thing last night, I held up the book on the Zoom, as Joe Biden likes to call it. The Zoom saw me holding up Obsession. I told everybody, go out and get three copies for all your hardcore anti-Trump people in your life. Let it explain to them why they are nuts if they think something bad happened. Come right back on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. The big news of the morning, the Norwegian parliamentarian who nominated Donald Trump for a Nobel Peace Prize is probably going to have to go into hiding. My guest is Byron York. I just tweeted out that in his new book, he proves conclusively, I think beyond a shadow of doubt, there ought never to have been a special counsel. And that special counsel Mueller broke his word. Let's talk about what Sarah Huckabee Sanders also describes briefly in her book, her memoir, Speaking for Myself, Byron. She talks about being interrogated by the Mueller team. She met the special counsel briefly and in a flash said Mueller was a wraith-like figure, small and tentative, and that it occurred to her in the flash he was not in charge of the investigation. You detail quite conclusively, I believe, he was a figurehead. Explain why you conclude that.
Well, you know, when Robert Mueller was appointed, he was widely praised. And I spoke with people who had dealt with Mueller in the early 2000s. You know, he took over the FBI right after September 11th. And they said he was super sharp. You know, bang, bang, bang. You're in a meeting with him. It was like being in law school with a professor that you didn't want to be called on for a question because if you didn't know the answer, it was bad news. So he was super sharp. And clearly, the Mueller that we saw on July 24, 2019, who went up to Capitol Hill and testified about his report, was a completely different man. He was slow. He had a difficult time answering some of the most basic questions, formulating complex sentences. He was just a different man, and a lot of people thought that he had experienced some sort of cognitive decline. So what happened was, when that happened, a lot of people in the Trump defense went back and they looked over what had happened during the investigation, and that Mueller's staff would very, very rarely let him talk to the Trump team. They couldn't get him on the phone. They didn't see him in person. Rudy Giuliani, who joined the Trump team in April of 2018, had all of one meeting with Mueller, and in that meeting, the whole Trump team is stunned. They go over some issues in the case, and one of the issues they discuss is the Justice Department policy that a sitting president cannot be indicted. And everybody who's listening knows that was a huge issue in this case. And Mueller didn't know the policy. He didn't recall the policy. Now, obviously, the Robert Mueller of old knew precisely what this was, but he had the difficulty recalling what the policy was, and an aide stepped in to say that the office would take it under advisement and they'd get back to the Trump team. But everybody in the Trump team said, wow, what's going on? And the reason this is important, the fact that Mueller was suffering cognitive decline during the investigation. The reason this is important, remember back to the controversy. When he's first appointed, he hires a bunch of Democratic lawyers, some of whom have been big Democratic donors. And the idea is that, boy, these prosecutors all seem to, you know, lean on the Democratic side. And the idea was that, well, Robert Mueller is a straight shooter. He will ride herd.
I said that so many times. I said that so many times on the air.
You said it so many times. And the thing is that could he really do that when he was in the situation that he was in? And the Trump people began to believe the answer was no.
Now, Byron, I hope you will come back after. The book is already in the low hundreds on Amazon. It should be a number one by the end of today or tomorrow. Obsession. People need to get three copies and give them to their Trump-hating friends. But we've got to get you back because we've been talking about the bad side of this. I want to praise Kevin McCarthy, Leader McConnell laughing at Speaker Pelosi. I want to praise Chris Stewart and Jordan and Zeldin. I want to play Sekulow and Cipollone. I mean, they laid back. They ambushed the Congress. We've been talking about the special counsel this morning, but I want to get to Congress after you've had a couple of days. Are you just doing book tour endlessly? We got about a minute to the break, Byron.
I am, but I will make time for Hugh Hewitt anytime he wants to talk to me. How about that? Because,
oh, good. Dwayne will set that up. Well, Obsession is absolutely the book we needed in this election cycle. I don't know if you plan it this way, but it just blows away so many things. We haven't even talked about Jane and Marty yet. Nobody knows who Jane and Marty is. Have you discovered that yet, by the way? Nobody knows about Jane and Marty?
Yeah, and I'm very happy. You're referring to Jane and Marty Raskin, who are two very, very high-level defense lawyers who worked on the husband and wife, who worked on the Trump defense. And they worked way behind the scenes. But if you read the story, you'll see a number of quotes from Jane Raskin, who was kind enough to talk to me.
Oh, my goodness.
What went on.
You know, if I ever get in trouble, God forbid, I'm hiring Stephen Larson, who's the retired district court. But if he's not available, I'm hiring Jane and Marty. When we talk next, we'll talk about Jane and Marty. People don't know who Jane and Marty are. Well, you got to read Byron York's Obsession. Go to Amazon right now. Order copies for all your never-Trumper friends. Order copies for all the people who are on the fence. And get one for yourself so you're smart about this. Byron York, always a pleasure. Follow Byron on Twitter, at Byron York. Come back. I got a lot more to do today. I may have gotten some tape. Dwayne didn't do a lot of tape for me today, so I went out and found some for myself. And we will play that for you next hour. We also have Sarah Huckabee Sanders coming up today. Alistair Adele of Maricopa County. We got a lot going on, America. Don't go anywhere. It's the Hugh Hewitt Show. Hi, Hugh Hewitt for ReliefFactor.com. If you are in pain and you want out of pain, well, you need to talk to the people that get it done. Pete and Seth Talbot, the father-son owners of ReliefFactor.com. They tell me that sometimes whole families can be helped when one member of the family gets out of pain. For example, finally, a married couple gets to sleep through the night again when one isn't tossing and turning with a terrible back. That's why Pete and Seth created the 3-week quick start, so you can find out if those people are you. For about $1 a day, you can see if you can get out of pain, and after that, lessen the cost of a cup of coffee a week to stay out of pain. The 3-week quick start is like a trial pack, and it can be at your door in about 2 to 3 days. Let's face it, getting older, exercise, even everyday living can create discomfort, pain. You don't order Relief Factor just for yourself. Order it for your wife, your husband, your family, your friends. They miss the old you, too. 3-week quick start at ReliefFactor.com or call 800-500-8384. 800-500-8384.